Just a quick announcement, first of all, that I did mention the first night about some of the difficulties we have in our BSWA organisation. But when we're on retreat, please leave it alone. Let it go. There won't be anything happening until the 22nd of April. That's when we have our SGM. And anyone who's a member will be informed of what's going on. You get your proxy forms and other stuff. I'll put it on the internet so make sure as many people get it as possible. But right now, this is meditation retreat. So please, don't even, if you want to talk about it, come and see me personally. So we don't want to interfere with people's retreats. Just make that nice and clear, first of all. Many of you have been working really hard, and this is retreat time. This is holiday. So you don't want to mess it up with all this other stuff. But if you want to see me personally, then of course, but not publicly. Okay, so now we have our first real talk about how to meditate. And of course, the first thing is to learn how to really just let go. There is the time when you work, you do your work. It should be even 5 days a week, so many hours a week. And of course, if it gets more than that, it gets not a very good work-life balance. And it's also, as many people know, that you lose your creativity, you get tired. When you get tired, you sort of make silly decisions, and you're acting out of not a very clear mind. So that is one of the reasons why we come here, to take a break, to relax, to increase our health, our energy. And this is what we're doing here. And sometimes you know that it's an old simile, but it's one of the best. And if people keep asking me, why do you keep repeating the same old similes? And the reason is, I know as many of you have come here so many times, it is because if you understood them, then you wouldn't need to come back here again. So that's why I have to keep on repeating them. So, and this simile is actually seeing fuller pictures. It builds on what I was saying yesterday about from stillness we get wisdom, we can see things truly, not when we're just rushing around. So that was a simile of walking up Kingsbury Drive. Many years ago, when this, how many years is this now? We've been here 34 years now? Yeah, 34 years. 34 years up in the top of Kingsbury Drive. For the first of those 7 years, we would always go up and down that hill in the car. And there was one morning, it was like a beautiful morning like today. It's not too hot, not too cold, no sign of rain. Got back from some appointment early, and so I said, I'm going to walk up the hill. Now, it's not just getting exercise, just for fun, to enjoy the nice walk. And so, you know, and actually by myself. So I told the driver to go up, and I'll be up there later on. You know, these days as a monk, it's really hard to get exercise. Because I start walking, and people say, no, I'll give you a lift. I say, I need the exercise, but I need the merit. So anyway, what happened was that I managed to convince a fellow to go up by himself, and I walked. And as I was walking up from the bottom of Kingsbury Drive, just the junction of the main highway, just walking up, taking my time, no sort of not just trying to get my heartbeat up or beat my personal best record of ascending the hill. But that's just crazy stuff. So for me, it was just enjoying a nice little bit of exercise. And I was walking up that hill, just looking around, enjoying the scenery. And it was strange, because what happened was I could not recognize my surroundings. It was weird, different. Not just slightly different, but very different than anything I remembered in the front seat of the car looking through the window. And of course, it was just so strange. I saw things I never recognized before. The whole thing looked different. So, you know, I was really weird, so I decided to explore this phenomena. So I stopped and just stared. And then it changed again. The hillside, you could see so many more blades of grass. You could see little rocks, which I'd never seen before. Little flowers. I don't know if they were weeds or the flowers, I don't care, but now I could see them. You could see just right down the bottom of the valley, there was a little stream, it was still running. And little rocks, birds, and just the trees and the small trees, and just the way they were curved all over the place, and the bark, and some of the lichen on the rocks. And it was just, I'd never seen anything so beautiful. And of course, what I started wondering, why have I never seen that before? Why have I never appreciated just how beautiful that hillside is? And how much detail, how much texture, how much richness is there? I've never seen that before. 7 years living up that hillside, up and down in the car, 2 or 3 times a week. Why have I now seen it for the first time? And of course, you explore. Now, the exploration, it was... Now, sometimes people say we should not have the wandering mind. We should stop the wandering mind. It really depends on how you spell that word, wandering. If it's with an A, W-A-N-D-E-R-I-N-G, then stop that. If it's W-O-N-D-E-R-I-N-G, the wandering mind, yes, that's investigation. So I let my mind wander. W-O-N-D-E-R. And as my mind wandered about what was going on, that's exploring it. Now, because my background was science, you just saw it from a scientific perspective. It's just what happens on an eye when light hits the back of it, on the retina. It is actually a chemical reaction happens on the retina, and that chemical reaction, I don't know how the rest of it works, creates the electrical impulses which goes up the optic nerve, and then the brain works it out as you perceive, you know, what's out there. But I remember as a kid, you know, because I'm old, we used to develop our own photographs. Have you ever done, you know, developing of the old type of photographs on photographic paper? I remember that at school, because you take the photograph on the negative and you do something else. This photographic paper, you put it in the solution, and you'd have to wait for about 3 or 4 minutes until the picture emerged, you know, out of the white paper. And that was fascinating. You know, you do it there and you'd observe with wonder at that little piece of paper, and the image just slowly just developed and came out. And if you took that photographic paper out too quickly, you know, the image would, you know, be only half formed. If you waited and waited and waited, it would be fuller, and more detail would emerge from the photograph until it was a full image. It took about 3, 4, 5 minutes to come out. And that's so similar to what happens in the human eye. It takes time for the image to develop on the back of your eye. And this is precisely what was happening. Looking through the window of a speeding car, rushing around this way, rushing around that way, it means that what you see, this is with the sense of sight, what you actually see in your eye, as soon as it appears, another image comes and blocks it up and blocks it off. Another image comes and disturbs it. Another image comes up and disrupts the former one. The images don't have enough time to actually to form fully. Your senses are just not given the time necessary to fully see, in this particular sense of sight, see what is really there. And so that's what happened when I got out of the car and walked. Of course, my eye had more time to actually form a more full image. That's why I started seeing more when I walked instead of in a car. And fortunately, I stopped and stood still. And that's when, just staring, the image fully formed and the details, you know, became quite clear. And the lovely thing about this, unexpected, the colours became so rich and detailed. And I'd never seen the hillside as beautiful as that before. Simply because I had time for my sense of sight to fully absorb what was out there. And it was beautiful. And from that, I understood about, you know, wisdom, beauty. Seeing things truly, it becomes so gorgeous when you slow down and stop. That's one of the reasons why any of you, I don't know if you, there's a couple of committee members here, just working so hard. But now's the time to stop. I know sometimes we're asked to go fast, me too. But then there comes a time when we give ourselves moments of peace, just to relax, to put all that aside, and then to be calm and quiet. And you know that it has been proven many times that when you are calm and quiet, it affects other people as well. Other people around you tend to relax and become more soft and calm and peaceful. And that was so well established, even by some research which was done at Sussex University, that when they tried to get people meditating, and in the area around them, other people became less aggressive, less violent, became more loving and calm. There's the old simile of the Buddhist elephant, which I'll probably come across later on in this series of talks. You know, just in brief, the elephant story, elephant, good elephant, but suddenly turned to be a nasty elephant. And then they found out it's because there was a bunch of thieves behind the elephant stall who would meet there every evening. And the elephant didn't understand what they were saying, but picked up their vibes and became a violent elephant. And then when the person, Bodhisattva, saw this, then he had all the thieves arrested and put monks behind the elephant stall at night time to meditate, discuss Dharma, calm, peaceful people. Of course, the elephant picked up on the vibes of the monks and became very peaceful. So he said, just people being peaceful, it affects everybody, makes everybody calm and peaceful. And I heard that research, you know, just which repeated what was said in the old Buddhist Jataka tales. I heard that research from someone who said it was quoted on the Australian Q&A program when they were doing some a discussion with the experts on what to do about global terrorism, especially the situation in Iraq. And the person who quoted this happened to be the editor of the Spectator magazine in London. When he was asked, you know, what was your solution to terrorism in the Middle East, he replied, well, quoting this research, when the peaceful people are around, then you don't get so much violence. So he said his solution was parachuting in some Buddhist monks into Syria instead of bombs, and we'd just not be nice and peaceful as a result. And being cheeky Ajahn Brahm, I said, oh yeah, I could think of a couple of monks I'd like to parachute into. No, of course you wouldn't do things like that. And don't some of you start thinking, yeah, I can think of a couple of BSWA members. Stop that. I'm the only one around here who's allowed to be cheeky. Because you know I would never do that. So instead what we do is we realise that just when we're peaceful, we actually see things much more deeply and we can enjoy the joy of it. This is why wisdom has to come from peace and stillness. So if you have any problems, any difficulties need to be solved, put them down, be peaceful, and then you can see some interesting solutions. But right now, don't think about it, don't worry about it, just learn how to be still and peaceful. So, how do we do that, is the problem. Now, one of the difficulties is that we always try too hard. Always try too hard and usually make things worse. So in a meditation retreat, we learn how to relax and let go. What do you mean? How can you relax and how can you let go? You all know that letting go is the key to deep meditation, any type of meditation. But how can we do that? It's a very good question. And many times people, it's nice that you can actually feel safe enough and confident enough to ask me any of these questions. I mean, so you say, you know, how do you let go, Ajahn? And this is a training where you learn. Like anything else in life, whatever other skill you have, whether it's carpentry, driving a car, or, you know, accounting, you have to learn, train. And so the first thing about training how to let go is learning how to be aware. Mindfulness is looking at the right part, you know, of your body or your mind and learning what letting go is. So this is one of the reasons why we start with our posture when we meditate. You be aware of your posture. Just something very simple, but just how it feels. Ache, pain. We have a very limited vocabulary of physical feelings. This is one of the reasons why I really feel a lot of sympathy for doctors who, and therapists and monks and nuns. You know, you come and tell the problems. Well, how does it feel? Well, it don't feel good. That tells me a lot. You don't feel good. Well, it hurts. Yeah, but where does it hurt? Oh, I don't know. It doesn't give enough information. So in order to understand, you know, what's going on with your body and understand what letting go is, we need more data, more information. We have to be mindful, aware. And a good example of this is a little anecdote of what you can do when you have more awareness. It was of one of the monks, I can't say who he was, but he was a meditator, but he always had pain no matter which way he sat. You know, cushions, chairs, leaning against the wall. So it was something really strange that, you know, this was weird. So he went to see the doctor. Sorry, that's just the ghost trying to get in. No ghost, that's only joking. Please don't get scared, take me seriously. Just the wind. So we always try so hard to meditate, and this guy was trying to find the best posture, it was always hurting. So eventually he went to see the doctor. The doctor couldn't find anything wrong, so had a CT scan. And that's where they found there was a deformity in his spine. Genetic. Could not be cured. You know, just surgery was not an option. And so what the doctor said, he said, well, I advise you not to meditate. I'm a monk, I have to meditate, said this monk. He said, well, you're just going to be in pain, that's all. Can't do anything. And imagine that's like, you know, a politician being asked not to talk. So this is my life, I have to do this. So anyway, not finding any solace in the conventional medicine, he searched around a little book, and somebody told him about a little technique, do it yourself, which actually would work tremendously well. And I tell this story because it relates to what we do with mindfulness and letting go. He said, in this book it said, other people have these problems. On either side of your spine are muscles, which you are not aware of. And much of your body you're not aware of because you don't have to be aware of it. It's just automatic. So, he said, those muscles which you're not aware of, just get some awareness of them. Just simply by touching them, stroking them. Put your hand behind your back and just stroke them. And that's what he did. Every morning, I don't know how long, for about 3 months. Just basic exercise. Because people know enough about neuroscience these days that when you have awareness of something, you are building up the neural connections, your sensitivity. You just touch it, stroke it, and after a while you can become more sensitive to it. So sensitive to it, after 2 or 3 months, he never needed to touch those muscles to be able to experience them. In the same way, can you experience your forehead now? Can you know how it feels? Don't have to touch it. Can you feel it? You know, my arm, I know its position. I know my breath. But this is with his back muscles. He had enough sensitivity of them, he could feel them. That was having the mindfulness, the awareness of that part of the body. And the next part was to exercise them, stretch them, loosen them, stretch them, loosen them. How do you do that? Trial and error. So he tried this, he tried that, and all the time he was aware of those muscles until he could, oh, they moved. And training, he could have enough awareness of those muscles, he could stretch them, relax them at will. I hope you've never had those strokes or accidents, you know, where that you can't walk and you have to learn how to walk again. But in my job, you do see people, meet people, and just to be able to actually start to feel those limbs again and to start learning how to walk again when you haven't walked. But you used to walk, but now you've lost that ability. The trial and error. You know, it is exactly how you learn when you're a kid. Sometimes knowing how these things work, you look at children and look at them when they're trying to walk. They fall over many times, but soon, trial and error, they learn how to keep balanced. So that trial and error, you're aware, you have the courage to experiment until you get it. You learn how to walk. You learn how to move those muscles so you can exercise them. And now he exercises them so they're strong, much stronger than the similar muscles in my back, and they perfectly compensate for the weakness in the spine. And the problem has been solved. A bit of mindfulness gives you the power to know what's going on there. So that's with exercising those muscles. For the mindfulness and the letting go, which is so close to compassion and kindness that I often interchange those words. So the mindfulness and the letting go, or the kindness. You know, you feel your body when you start meditating. I feel my legs. You know, one way how to feel those legs is actually to ask questions. Legs, how are you? Now, this is not being stupid, because when you ask a question, your mind automatically looks at the place you're putting your question to. The legs. How's my legs? How's your nose now? How's the temperature? When asked questions, you get awareness. And once you get, how's your energy levels? Once you ask that question, you get an answer. This is a wonderful way of actually focusing and arousing mindfulness on the place which is really important to you. So, you start meditating and I feel my legs. Legs, how are you? You know, when I ask that question, I realize my legs need to be adjusted right now. Otherwise, they'll get sore. Because I was busy talking to you, I wasn't even paying that attention to this. But once I ask the question, oh, okay, it's popping there, now I move. That is kindness. That is being compassionate to your own body. Learning how to relax it. So I usually go through the whole body, and I'll probably do this in a guided meditation sometime. But at the moment, you know, you feel your body, you relax it, but that's not enough. Because, yeah, body feels good. But there's always, maybe it's my age, there's always some place which is aching, which is sore, which is tired. That is why I said this a couple of days ago when I went to an alms offering at a Thai restaurant, that in the northeast of Thailand, it's very sort of earthy language, and they call all old women, mare is like mother, like missus, like auntie, like they call them mare oi. And the equivalent, the man, poor, is poor oi. Mare oi and poor oi. That's like, you know, granddad, grandma, uncle, auntie, someone senior to you, old, of those two genders. And the reason why they call them poor oi and mare oi is because every time they get up, they say, oi, oi, And that's how it was explained to me. I never made that up. Believe it or not. That is how it was explained to me. Because in village life, elderly people, when they get up, So it's with aches and pains. So maybe, I don't know, I imagine, oi. And then it was close to me. Your sister, oi. And anyway, you can see there's always aches and pains, tightness. It's just, you know, the body just getting old, wearing out. So when that happens, you know, I look at my body and I can feel it. After a lot of awareness of your own body, you actually get to know the symptoms. You get to know how it feels. Whether it's tired, whether it's stressed, and where that stress is manifested, what's going on in your body, become really aware of it. Now, you don't even need to give it a name even. There's so many feelings in the body. I know, I recognize them, but they haven't been named yet. There's nothing in the dictionary for them, but you know what they feel like. You recognize them. And then when you start to recognize them, that's where the fun part starts. Because you have awareness of them. Just like that monk had awareness of the muscles in his back. You have awareness. But, for example, some people have bad digestion. Irritable bowel syndrome. And that's very common these days because people have stressful lives. So what do? Yeah, you can go and take medication if you want. Whatever, but what you can do is actually you'd look at your bowels with your mind. You can start to feel them, become sensitive to them. Just like the monk who became sensitive to the muscles in his back, become sensitive to the feelings in your digestive tracts. You really build up awareness of them. It's not something you can just decide to do, okay, right, I'll do it now. It doesn't work. It takes training, to get that awareness going. Sometimes days, weeks, months, I don't know. Till you get really aware of those feelings in the body. And of course, this is really powerful for people who have cancers. A cancer, you feel it. You really get to know it, what it feels like. What does the breast cancer feel like? Maybe not have a name, but you start to get to know it. Prostate cancer, I don't know, all these other sort of stuff which you have. What does it feel like? You get to know it, first of all. And once you get to know it, you feel it. It's just like even this morning, just you know how bright the lights are. And if it's too light, you can actually turn it down. If the feedback from the talk, from the microphone yesterday evening was too much feedback, you can turn it down or you can turn it up. You can adjust it once you have mindfulness. And that's what you do with the feeling. You learn where those little knobs are. The relax to the max knob. And the tightness, fear. And you learn just how your attitude towards things changes the feeling in the body. Attitude of fear. You get tight. Relax. And it gets really loose. And you do that. I do that often. Any feelings in the body, aches, pains, tiredness, stress, anything you feel, they can feel it. You know it very well. And you know how feeling it, how to lessen its tightness, give it more space, relax it, be kind to it, until the whole thing, you can feel it. Loosening, softening, until it just vanishes. It's a wonderful thing to be able to do. It's one of the great side effects of being a monk and meditating. It's not just about getting to jhanas and getting enlightened. It's all these other little things you can do. There are other little skills you pick up on the way. So, of course, one of those great examples of that, and I like telling this story because you know that when you do give a talk, you've got to make it interesting. Especially after breakfast. Exciting even. So that was the time I was in my cave. Just the opposite side of the road. And I don't know what people had given me to eat that morning. But it did not sit well in my stomach. In fact, it was not just indigestion. It was full on food poisoning. You know, sometimes it's one of the problems being on the head of the line. I should get someone else to taste the food first, wait for 5 minutes and see what it does to them first of all. And sometimes, you know what happens? Sometimes people, they get this new recipe and they try it on the monks first and then they give it to the husband because they know the monks don't complain. Husbands do. So anyway, this time I don't know what it was I'd eaten, but really bad food poisoning. And now by that time I felt a little bit sort of not off, but you know, just meditate, have a rest or something, and it all go away. But this one was real food poisoning. I was in my hut, and I was laying down because, you know, I thought, you know, go to sleep, let the body look after itself, and it will do the right thing. You know what happened? And you've got the contractions in your guts, and totally just, and you can't do anything about it. You know, it's amazing that if you make things dramatic, people actually remember it. You just said, I was sitting in my heart, I was really painful and it really hurt a lot. And that was what was happening, because it was really painful, just the contractions come and you just, automatic response, totally premeditated, unpremeditated. So what did you do? And of course, you know, when you feel really sick like that, sort of, you know, you don't have mobile phones. The nearest phone is in the office, which is, you know, down by the kitchen. You know, if by the time I crawled down there, you probably find it be locked. Or you go on to the phone, to the local doctor or the emergency line. I'm sorry, but our call lines are busy right now. Your call is important to us. Please hang on. I don't know. Have you done that sort of stuff? That's crazy. But anyway, I just even if you did get straight through, it's, you know, about 20 minutes, half an hour, you know, from the... Oh, this happened once. Well, sometimes living in the forest is very peaceful unless things go wrong. Because we had a lady who came to see us, and you know, she was mentally disturbed. And so we had to call in the psychiatric emergency team. And, you know, that's the people who have to deal with people. She, you know, she had still had the band on from Bentley Mental Hospital. And so she came there and saw that band and had to call the PET team. And so the PET team came, and they came, you know, pretty quickly, but they said, oh, was she violent? And she had to throw a cup at me. No, she was a bad shot, and I would calm up and duck this way, duck that way. And I told her, I said, oh, we can't actually, according to our regulations, we can't actually look at her, see her, until the police come. So they called the police in Armidale. And the police came, but they didn't know where the monastery was. They went all the way round by Serpentine Dam, you know. That took about an hour and a half. And then when they came, sort of, you know, the lady wasn't that bad. And so they took her to the PET team car. And the PET team car, they had their headlights on all that time. And so when they went into the car, the battery was dead. So they couldn't take her away, and so put in the police car. No, that's against our regulations. And it's crazy. You know, it's like, you know, I used to see in the cartoons the Keystone Cops and, you know, all the things which can go wrong. And these are people who are supposed to be trying to save your life. So, anyway. Okay. I can't help but, you know, I'm a Jambram, it's just my conditioning, I can't resist this. About the fire in Madrid. There's a big conflagration, the poor part of Madrid. really old houses, wooden houses. And by the time the fire brigade got there, they realised their ladder wasn't big enough to actually to rescue this poor woman who was stuck on the top story. So they got out the blanket thing. And they told the woman to jump, jump. And she was too scared to jump. You know, 6, 7 stories, would you jump? So it was really sort of scary. But then a big sort of flame came. She had no choice. So she jumped. And this is, you know, Madrid. These are trained Spanish firemen. And so they moved the blanket backwards and forwards until just before she was about to hit it, olé! Please be careful. I mean, it's only a joke, it's not a recommendation of suicide. I don't train fire services. So anyway, I was stuck in my cave, just I didn't really want to call emergency services. But so, what do you do? And mindful. Go feel those contractions. Feel this, you know, the automatic, you know, just response. And then you feel it, and then you start to understand what makes it less painful, less tight, less of a less traumatic. You know, if you try to block the screams, it makes them worse. You know, I'm a monk, I shouldn't scream. And that makes it more painful, and the scream gets louder. It's okay to scream. Scream. And then it was actually less. Look at the pain, the cause of that. Just, it's okay. Just, it got less and less. The mindfulness gives you the feedback. You start to actually see what's happening. Things never change. They don't stay still. They're always in motion, in change. So either the pain is going to get worse or it gets better. It doesn't never stay the same. So you're starting to feel what made the pain less of a problem. Less sharp, less troublesome. And whatever that was, I kept on doing that. Less troublesome. Relax it. Less pain. Incremental. Just I don't know what the pain scale is, but you know, the degree by degree, less. Until I was actually quite amazed. 20 minutes, and the pain had totally gone. No more irritation on the guts. I think there was just my normal, healthy digestive system. When 20 minutes before, you were really in agony. And how did that work? The mindfulness, maybe you all know what mindfulness is. But what I did was letting go. Kindness. Opening the door of my heart to that feeling. That was the key. Of course, you could not do that if you didn't have mindfulness. You didn't know what you're supposed to be letting go of. The feeling in the body became my little indicator, allowing me to get the feedback so I knew what made it worse, what made it better. Not by posture, not by food or medication, but just my attitude of the mind. The mind is incredibly powerful. And so when I started to use simple, nothing psychic about it, not something supernatural. You're aware and use that kindness and it really relaxes it. The whole body becomes really loose and peaceful and the pain just disappears. Of course, I could do that in 20 minutes because, you know, I've been doing this for such a long time. So, you know, you do get some expertise in being a monk after all these years. And this is actually how you could relax everything. And so from the example like that, if people ask me, what is letting go? How do you let go? Practice. Experiment. Trial and error. Take, first of all, like a feeling in the body, a pain, a tightness, an ache. Take that and see how you can relax it. And of course, you can actually see it, feel it. It actually gets looser, it gets freer, it gets more peaceful, you feel good. And that means you're going the right direction. You get tighter, then you're going the wrong direction. Control, that makes him very tight. Let go, it's loose. Anger, open the door of your heart, compassion, it's loose. And you experiment, you can feel that on your own body. And it's incredible just how that can have huge effects in medicine and in your health. Aware of your body and know how to be kind to it. Sometimes, what is the connection between kindness and letting things be? And it's kindness, opening the door of your heart to this moment. What that means is stopping controlling it. Stop wanting it to be something else. Of course, you all know that one of those teachings which I'm really sort of pushing in my life is not wanting things to be different. Not wanting to improve yourself. Because self-improvement is what causes stress. Whether it's in life, you haven't got good enough grades at school, you've got to learn some more. Whether that's in your relationship, try and improve your husband, try and improve your wife, try and improve yourself. It doesn't work, it just makes it yucky. Try and improve your meditation, try and improve your health, try and improve your figure, try to lose weight. I love myself as I am. The door of my heart is open to me, and the door of my mouth is open to fish, chips and condensed milk. But I can actually see just the feeling of like health in the body when I don't fight. Feeling of relaxation. The feeling of peace, the feeling of openness when you are kind. Accept this moment as it is. And you know what happens, of course? Accept this moment as it is, and it develops. That's what I do. When you meditate, sit down, close my eyes and start becoming aware of my body. How are you going, body? It's amazing just how disconnected we are from our body. We're so busy doing something else. So busy that even, you know, those iPhones and those iPads. I told us a few days ago, you know what? Did anyone tell you what the I stands for? Idiot. Idiot tablet. Or whatever. But one interesting thing was that, well, why do people actually talk to one another, SMS people over on these tablets or these iPhones? And, you know, to make the point, you know, sometimes I said, but why do you always have to invite me to go and give a talk here, give a talk there? You can see me on YouTube. Haven't you seen enough talks? How many times did you have to hear the story of the two bad bricks to leave me alone? It's on YouTube, you can see it any time you like. But it's the same phenomena. Yeah, you may be able to see, I don't know who the favourite pop songs are at the moment, but I don't know. Maybe you can see the Rolling Stones, okay, it shows my age. You can see the Rolling Stones, you know, on the TV, video clips. But why do you have to sort of pay so much money, wait such a long time, to see them live in the stadium? It's stupid. Why do you have to see them live? Because it's different, isn't it, to see something live than to see something on the screen. Even though you can be much more comfortable seeing it on the screen, you can be sitting in your armchair, you know, seeing it on the screen. You don't have to be crowded with other people. You can go to the toilet any time without having to go in a queue. If you don't like it, you can delete straight away. But here, you're stuck. You can't go to the toilet whenever you want. You can't delete me that easily. So why do people come to a retreat? You can see it online. Because it's something different know, when it's face to face, live, close. It's something different when the closer you get to something, the more aware you are. The awareness becomes very much stronger when you're right in it, observing it, not just even with one sense, with many senses. Much more actually just gets transmitted when it's live performance. That's why I know that, you know, you have to keep traveling, because just putting everything on YouTube, having videos, recordings, will never be convey enough information. This being is something more powerful. So because of that, you understand that with mindfulness, when you're actually with something, you have amazing abilities. Open the door of your heart to this moment, being here, feeling it. That's where you get to know. Experiment. Just with your leg. How can I make my leg more happy? Give it a little bit of a massage. There we are. Then you find that things relax, become very peaceful. That is letting go. That is kindness. What relaxes you? What takes away tightness? Similarly, just to make it even more clear, of a guitar string. Guitar string has to be stretched on both ends. Or let's make it a cello string, because one of our good friends over here was a professional cellist. I won't say who he is, but he's sitting over there. Look, you stretch it at both ends and it gets very tight. And then when something, boing, it makes a really clear sound. And imagine you've got that string, that cello string, and then you loosen the tension. You let go. You let it get looser and looser and looser and looser. So there's no tension on it at all. And something doesn't make a sound. Doesn't reverberate. Doesn't create more noise. This is what we mean by letting go. And my guts were like a guitar string which was pulled really tight, but I knew how just to let them go. It got so loose. Everything just flowed and there was no problem, no inflammation, nothing left. That is where we learn what letting go is. Letting go of stress. And of course, what is stress? Is you're pulled into the future. Imagine you, your mind, is pulled off into the future. What's going to happen next? When are we going to have that meeting? What's going to happen? And then the past pulls you back. What happened in the last week? You're pulled, you're stretched, the past and the future. And the more importance you give that, the tighter you become. And sometimes your fear of the future, the worry of the past are so strong, boink, you break. You have like a breakdown or you get really sick. So you just loosen both hands. The future, who knows what happens. That's what Ajahn Chah used to tell me. Don't worry when you're sick. You'll either get better or you'll die. Don't worry about the BSWA. It either gets better or I leave. Well, that's what Ajahn Chah taught me. You either get better or you die. Simple. So it's no problem. So we can actually start the Buddhist Society of Serpentine. By invitation only. Special secret elite club. We have a special handshake. And not we can't shake hands. The special signal. I'm only messing around. But anyway, so that kindness is actually not being afraid of the future, not being afraid of the past. As I said last night, Snoopy wisdom, worrying about the future won't stop bad things happening. It just stops you enjoying the present moment and gets you to probably make more bad things happen. So we learn how to relax. doesn't matter. We feel this in our body, we feel it in our mind. So after a while, when we get our body really healthy, that's where we train, letting go, kindness, compassion to our body, until the body gets really relaxed. You know, one thing which, you know, when I was messing around with this, some of these things you never expected. But when my body really relaxed, it felt really good. It felt delightful. It's a pleasure of a relaxed body. And that got me back to one of these conferences I went to in Sydney some years ago, where there was this, remember his name, I saw him again at the conference in Toronto. It was a psychologist from Stanford University, and he was doing research into mindfulness. And he said that in this particular piece of research, he took students, because if you volunteer to do research, you get like credits for, you know, your exams. So he said, it's really a good deal. Students love this, because half the students, they went to a meditation retreat for the day. And the other half, you know, the control group, because, you know, psychology, how effective meditation is, let's try something else. And the control group was sent to a Californian spa, all expenses paid for the day. While the other ones went to meditation to see what the difference was. I've never been to a spa, but people tell me, you know, the hot stones, and just, what else do you have? Hot baths, massage, hot oils, is that right? I don't know. Anyway, we went to this spa for the day. And afterwards, when they return, they're all paid for by the university. You try and get away with that in UWA, and you'll be up for fraud. But anyway, that they're all paid for, and at the end of the day, they gave them the standard psychology test to see how stressed, how relaxed they were. And the results were just so convincing, so clear. The people who went to the spa were far more relaxed than those who went to meditation. But it wasn't this type of, it wasn't Ajahn Brahm meditation, it was Vipassana, you got a bit still, and watch your breath, watch, don't move. Of course that doesn't relax you. But it got me thinking, just why does a spa relax you? Why do people pay a lot of money for that? And the reason is because your body feels so relaxed and calm after all that massage and hot oil or whatever else it is. When I grew up, hot oil was what you poured on people attacking your castle. Must be a different temperature or different oil, I don't know what. But here, the why that works is, you know, you get really relaxed and you pay your money for that because it's delightful. Ah, it's so good. It's the delight. Which is one of the reasons why people like to go to those spas. And that's what you remember. I remember just meditating. You meditate here and, it's so relaxed. The body feels delightful when it's relaxed. This is an important point of meditation. The delight of relaxation. It feels pleasurable when everything is loose and happy. And so, exploring, investigating, I remember, I felt really delightful. You get attached to that Ajahn Brahm, come, let's get some pain going. It's crazy, isn't it? People are afraid of delight. But no, I said, okay, let's stay with this delight. Focus on the delight. Be mindful of the delight. You know what happened? It got deeper. The delight got more intense, and the body got more and more relaxed. This is something which I'll repeat later on in the meditation course here. Don't be afraid of the delight of letting go, of relaxation, born of kindness, born of letting go. Because that sort of stuff is just the power source. It's like the fuel, the vehicle which takes you into the deepest of meditations. First of all, the deepest of relaxations in the body. And then later on, the deepest of mind states. The delight of relaxation, the pleasure of letting go. And so your body feels really loose, gets very healthy. And then afterwards, you start to do that to your mind, the emotional world, your peaceometer. So, I don't know, I like inventing new words. Kindfulness, that's actually just quite commonly used now. What else did I? Oh yeah, be hopey. Don't worry, be hopey. Because worrying about the future is looking at the future with a negative mind. Looking at the future with a positive mind is called hope. It is a bit of positive thinking. It's really important. And anyone here, how many of you here have blood type? Is B plus. You got any B plus people here? Because that's the best blood type. B positive. You might have heard that before. So you'll have an easy time in life. So when you when you look at your peaceometer, that's, you know, that how peaceful are you? How agitated are you? How fed up with you? How, you know, relaxed are you? Now this is like learning that muscles on either side of the spine. This is in your mental world, in your mind, your emotional world. How peaceful are you? How agitated? Agitation, restlessness, anger, fear, all those things which, you know, are on the high side of the peaceometer, you know, the restlessness, irritation. I call it just, what do I call it? I've forgotten how disturbed, irritated you are, or how peaceful are you? And now, sometimes in order to get people aware of that, it's just a standard little technique. Many therapists, doctors, nurses use this. Give it a number, 1 to 10. How agitated are you right now? How peaceful? Peaceful is number one, really peaceful. If it's 0, that's enlightened. 1, how peaceful are you? Oh, number 10 is really agitated. 20 is psychotic. 30 is Mr. Trump. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean that. And come on, I like telling silly stories. Anything for a laugh. But no. No, he's not that bad a guy. That wasn't a joke. I was trying to be compassionate. People laugh more about that. But anyway, you've got 1 to 10. How are you? Forget about other people. You give it a number of 1 to 10, and that gets you mindfulness. Remember, asking a question gives you the awareness, puts you in the right area. How aware, how calm are you right now? How agitated. And as soon as you do that, you get aware of the peaceometer. Give it a name like that. I'd invented that because the meter, like any other meter, thermometer, speedometer, how calm are you? Peaceometer. Once you have awareness of that, great. Now, what makes you more irritated? What makes you more peaceful? You learn. From your own experience, not from listening to others. Because you can listen to what I say, but do you really understand it? Does it really sort of, you know, work for you? Because unfortunately, too often, you taught meditation, other people taught meditation, great teachers said, I can't do it. It's not the technique is wrong, it's just we don't really fully understand how to implement it. So because of that, we look at our mind, our peaceometer, direct as you possibly can. What makes you more peaceful? What makes you more agitated? You can see that needle. Yeah, I feel a bit more peaceful now. Yeah, I'm agitated. I'm peaceful, I'm peaceful, I'm peaceful. But now it gets disturbed again. Why? You learn feedback from mindfulness. The courage to try this and try that until you find what works for you, what registers on your peaceometer, which you're very clear about, what makes it peaceful. You know what you find? What makes it peaceful is called letting go. Letting be. Compassion. Open the door of my heart to this, whatever it happens to be. That's where you learn how to let go. On your own body, on your own mind. What makes you more peaceful? What makes you more at ease? And that's where you learn. And after a while, you get so skilled at letting go. You know exactly what to do. Really agitated. Look at your mind. What makes it more peaceful? What makes it more agitated? Come on, let go. Just future, just let go. Past, let go. Present moment, let it be. That's the difference between letting go and letting be. Letting be was this present moment and its content you let be. Everything else you let go of. But sometimes it's actually more positive to be call it letting be. But letting go is fine. It's not negativity because it's just being more kind to what's left when everything else disappears. Now when you are in this present moment, when you let it be, you relax. Please give it a little time. This when I relax my body, it takes a time before it gets delightful, but after a while it's really delightful. The delightful present moment. Like the delightful relaxation in the body. The reason why people go to spas. Or they go to resorts. Because every now and again, actually next June, the Singapore do an executive retreat in some resort somewhere. The last time it was, where was it, in Phuket? No. It was in Phuket somewhere. So they give me this, it's a 5-star resort, you know, to actually, so they can get sort of more people in. Their families, so the kids can come, and the kids get looked after by the hotel staff. And because it was Thailand, and because I was a teacher, because they wanted to make sure they came back again next year, the hotel people did, you know, the manager came to see me and welcome me, you know, because it was Ajahn Brahm's retreat. And, you know, what about, was it, how many, 200, 300 people there? So that's quite a big booking for a hotel. So because I was the teacher there in Thailand, they decided to give me the best room in the whole hotel. This 5-star hotel, okay? And so it was with the beach view. So they took me in there, and you saw the beach and the ocean. And after a couple of minutes, it wasn't just beach and ocean. There was all these bikini-clad floozies messing around. So I closed the curtains, and I never opened them for another 9 days. And I said, what the point of giving me this room? I can't enjoy it. Just give me a broom cupboard. That's enough for me. Look where I live in my cave. I'm happy in there. What do you want to give me all this other stuff for? So no, respect, crikey. It's the wrong type of respect. But anyway, so I just closed the windows. And the one nice thing about being in a big room like that, you could actually go do your walking meditation inside. Really good, that was good. In a broom cupboard, you can't do that. Anyway, so there one is just why didn't I? But when I did see people there, they were on these recliners, you know, just reclining, just on next to the beach, hearing the waves come in and go out, the soft breeze just going past their heads, without a care in the world. Without a care in the world. Beep 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 beep. Oh, come on. On a resort by the beach. And you still go, beep, 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 beep. Who's that? Beep, 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 beep. crazy world. But anyway, the point was that when you can really let go, it feels really delightful. You feel relaxed, rested. And hopefully that's what you get here. In Club Med Serpentine, the resort to beat all resorts. This is not 5-star. You just go out at night and see how many stars you can see. That's how many stars this resort is. flow. That's how to let go, to relax. So that's also why we introduce the humour as well. When you laugh, you can't be angry. You can't be tense. You find relax. And you feel this delight. So this is actually what we're doing here. So, this is how we meditate. Sit down, relax, feel the body, learn how to let it go, relax into it, feel delightful. Have a look at your peaceometer, what makes it worse and what makes it better. Figure that out, trial and error, until you really get it. Letting go, what that really is. What is compassion, kindness? You feel it. And then you know the path of meditation. The rest is pretty simple. Those want further instructions, stage 1, stage 2, stage 3, stage 4. This is only first day, so stage 2 comes tomorrow, stage 3. But anyway, we'll deal with that later on. So okay, that's the talk for this morning. And because it's the first day, we don't have any interviews today. So the afternoon is free. You can meditate in your room. You can meditate in here. You can meditate in front of a cup of tea, just next to the kitchen. You can meditate in bed. I call that flat out meditation. So just learn how to relax. And just so when the mind wants to meditate, it just does it. Look at your peaceometer and your how relaxed you are. Work on that for today. 1, 2, 3. Sadhu. 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 Very good. Okay, so, we do have questions tonight, though. So, outside over there should be a box with some papers in. Box of papers next to it. If you have a question to ask, then you can write it in a piece of paper, put it in the box, and then the lucky ones will be answered. If they're not answered, well, it means you don't have enough good karma yet. So, that's the questions in the basket over there. So have a wonderful day and relax.